From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. Florida's statewide teachers union recently filed a lawsuit against the state over a sweeping education bill signed into law this year. One aspect of the law expands income eligibility for students taking advantage of Florida's corporate voucher program to attend schools outside the public school system. The teachers union contends the measure violates the single issue provision of the state constitution and takes away money from public schools. But some parents of special needs students worry the suit could jeopardize a program providing additional funds for their kids. Plus, the collection of world-renowned forensic anthropologist William R. Maples opens this week at the FGCU Library. Titled Dead Men Do Tell Tales, the exhibit documents some of his most famous death investigations, including that of Joseph Merrick, known as the Elephant Man, the family of Russia's last czar, and Spanish conquistador Francisco Pizarro. First, this news.
Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Amy Tardiff. The Florida Gulf Coast University Library unveils the William R. Maples collection this week. Titled Dead Men Do Tell Tales, the same title as his memoir, it's the field notes, cases, photographs, and personal papers documenting this world-renowned forensic anthropologist's investigations between 1960 and 1997. Maples ran the C.A. Pound Human Identification Center at the University of Florida in Gainesville, which, despite his fears, is still in operation after his death in 1997. He said in his book that for him, every day was Halloween. But that was a blessing, though, for the skeletons in his laboratory, he said, have tales to tell. Dr. Maples examined Joseph, that was his name, not John, Merrick, the Elephant Man skeleton. He investigated the death of Russia's last czar and his family, including his daughter Anastasia, who Maples' widow Margaret says he did not believe was ever found. He investigated the skeleton of Spanish conquistador Francisco Pizarro, and he autopsied serial killer Ted Bundy. Margaret Maples Gilliland donated the collection to FGCU's library in honor of FGCU forensic anthropologist Heather Walsh Haney, who was one of his students. Both women join us today to talk about the collection and Dr. Maples' legacy. Thank you for your time today, Margaret Maples Gilliland.
Hi, Amy. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you, too. And thank you for being here in studio, Dr. Walsh Haney.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
You can join our conversation or ask a question by calling 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. Join our live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. Or email us at gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Margaret, let's start with you. William got into forensic anthropology, I guess, by accident. What happened?
Well, as his book said, he was a freshman at the University of Texas, and at that time he didn't have computers, and the freshmen had the last registration time, and they asked him if he wanted, he couldn't get in his biology class, so they asked him if he wanted to take anthropology, and he said, fine, what's that? So he took anthropology and liked it, and toward the end of his college days, Tom McKern, who was a noted forensic anthropologist, joined the faculty, and Bill was in his first class. And actually, Bill was one of his first students. He was the second student to get the PhD from the University of Texas, and he got his master's from Texas under Dr. McKern. And he was a wonderful mentor and turned out to be a great friend of ours until his death.
Now, he didn't start with human investigations. In fact, among the more than 7,000 articles in the collection, there is also two primate skulls and 11 primate skeletons, and you spent some time in Africa, right?
Yes. We were four graduate students, and between his master's and his PhD, he got a job with Southwest Research Institute from San Antonio managing a primate research center, and we moved between Nairobi and Mombasa, which was about 140 miles down in the bush. And we had our first child over there and then came back and he did completed his graduate work for his doctorate, and we went back over for another 2 years where he's collecting material for his dissertation, and we had our second child in Nairobi. We were living in Nairobi then, and he was going out on the safari, and one of the places that he camped was on the shadows of Mount Kilimanjaro, where Hemingway had camped.
Wow. In fact, you met someone during your time in Africa who is the medical examiner in the news today, involved in one of the Michael Brown autopsies. Who is that?
That's right. Dr. Bob went with us to Africa. Excuse me, he went with us to Russia.
Oh.
And when we did Tsar Nicholas II, so Bill worked with him closely with the New York State Police.
Why did you donate Bill's collection to the Florida Gulf Coast University Library?
Well, I wanted them to be useful to graduate students, and Heather goes back a long way with us. She was actually an undergraduate with Bill, and if I'm not correct, and Heather can correct me, she was an undergraduate when we did the ValueJet plane in Miami, and she went down. And then she stayed, and after his death, she still worked here, and then she actually would stay with me when she was in Gainesville doing her research and doing her dissertation. And you know, we're very close, and I wanted her to have them, but at the university where she was.
Heather, what does it mean to you to have this collection here at FGCU?
I'm speechless. I feel so honored that I can carry on Margaret and Dr. Maples' legacy. And they both together were scholar practitioners. Margaret was a very important part of the C.A. Pound Human Identification Laboratory. And she, as you'll see in the exhibit, she traveled with him. She took beautiful photographs. She knows about anthropology. She knows the field. And to have a chance to share that with all the students at FGCU is amazing. And I'm just honored to share his legacy with everyone.
Is there something that the public or researchers or students can do with it? Can they come in and use it and that kind of thing?
They absolutely can. What they have done is they've digitized, to the best of my knowledge, all of his notes, articles, slides and photographs so that they can be accessed on the digital archive. And then you can make appointments to come in and look at the actual material, such as the non-human primate skeletal remains that are there, to evaluate them and collect your own data as well.
Now, the collection was donated prior to 2006, so it's first being presented this week. What took all that time?
All of the hours that went into documenting the collection was volunteer. And that just took time and energy, and it was also a labor of love. So with every page, you couldn't just turn the page. One has to read the page, and then you want to reread it because you can't believe that this piece of world history is in your hands and that it's tied here to FGCU. That's why it took so long, because it's a labor of love.
And we're going to get to some of those intriguing pieces in just a second, but because you call him your mentor, I'm just wondering if there are a couple of great things he taught you.
My goodness, he taught me to answer questions from students thoughtfully and to make sure that when I'm giving my time to someone who wants to learn, whether it is a neighbor, a family member, a student, a jury, that I really give it my all, that I speak plainly, that I don't try to elevate myself above others on this special area of knowledge, but that I impart knowledge in a way that people can understand it, and I don't separate myself from the knowledge by isolating myself with hyperbole and big words and things like that.
We're speaking with FGCU Associate Professor and Program Leader of Forensic Studies, Dr. Heather Walsh Haney, and Margaret Maples Gilliland, who donated the William R. Maples Collection to the FGCU Library. It opens this week. Join our conversation or ask a question by calling 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or join our live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. Well, the collection opens this week at the FGCU Library, and it contains documents and audiovisual materials about some very famous cases Dr. Maples investigated. So let's go through a few of them. And Margaret, jump in here when you've got something to add, because I know you were with him along the way. Dr. Maples called a 1981 case of some LaBelle drug smugglers or drug murders one of the most chilling ever to come to his attention, and that's a quote from his book. It started with tips from the FDLE in Fort Myers and former local medical examiner Wally Graves, always a great name for an Emmy. Why was Bill so affected by this case?
He worked with a colleague, an archaeological colleague, and the excavation took a week. He worked with the law enforcement people. He always worked with law enforcement people, and it was a tedious excavation. If you read the book, you will find out that that Brenda actually wanted a teaspoon to finish the excavation, because they gridded it like an archaeologist would. And it was extremely important how everything was found and what sequence, and then to see the manner of death is what he did. And it was just a very intriguing case for him.
And yet his work and that of an archaeologist, Brenda, helped convict close to 20 people for offenses from drug trafficking to murder right in our backyard.
That's correct. And I think they were worried. They heard rumors that there was a load of drug runners coming up from Miami to talk to them about what was going on. But they had police protection there, and they would go back every night to the hotel in Fort Myers. And the hotel was very good about providing them with clean clothes for the next day. It was a gruesome scene.
Dr. Maples carefully studied the bones of Joseph Merrick, also known as the Elephant Man. I guess his name over the years got changed to John, but he says he's seen the reports. It's Joseph. Why did he want to see and examine his skeleton?
Well, there was a lot of talk about the different types of diseases that he could actually have, and I don't think anybody had ever actually studied the skeleton. And at that time, a celebrity had offered the museum $1 million to buy the skeleton. And Bill did not like bodies to be disrespectfully treated. And we went over at Christmas and worked 2 weeks in the London hospital. It was in the Whitechapel area. And it was an incredible experience. I was fortunate enough to go with him and took his notes, and I did his videotaping, and it was incredible. He discovered that the majority of the disfigurement was soft tissue and not the bone, and it's the most amazing skeleton I've ever seen.
He said Merrick's skeleton spoke to him like none other. Do skeletons speak to you, Heather?
I guess they do. They speak to me scientifically. They speak to me emotionally. And I really never lose sight of the fact that these are human beings with families and friends and loved ones, and that the work that I'm doing will hopefully help the families as well as the victim.
Dr. Maples set out to see if President Zachary Taylor had been poisoned with arsenic, thereby becoming the first president of the U.S. to have been assassinated. But what did he find?
Well, he actually found that he was not assassinated. We drove up to Kentucky, and the body was disentombed. It was in a tomb in the back of the Zachary Taylor cemetery in Lexington, and I did the videotaping on that, and we removed the casket. It was a lead-lined casket, and they took it to the medical examiner's office. He worked closely with Dr. Nichols, and Dr. Greathouse. Dr. Greathouse was the medical examiner, and Dr. Nichols was one of the medical people, and he always worked closely with the pathologists and people like that. And they had to take a saw and cut the lead casket open. And their analysis, they knew that Zachary Taylor had not been embalmed. It was a historical fact. And they were able to take fingernails and toenails and hair samples and samples from the fluids, and later determined by tests that the amount of arsenic in his body was what would be normally expected in 1850.
Dr. Maples went to Russia to investigate the murders of the last Russian Tsar and his family 70 years after it occurred. He said that mystery of the Romanovs had fascinated him since he was a child. He even organized his own team and asked the Russians to let them investigate. Now, the mystery many people have heard about is that Tsar Nicholas's daughter, Anastasia, was never found. What was the story there?
Well, actually, she was finally found. Well, when they executed them, and I saw the bodies, and no one, I don't care who they are, should be treated the way these people were. They were, they took them from where they were executed and took them out into the woods, and it took them several days to decide where they were going to bury them. They threw some of them down in a mine, and I think they tried to burn a couple of them, but the truck got stuck, and the place was very isolated. It was still isolated when we were there in 1992, and geophysicist Dr. Abdomen with another one, and I don't recall his name, discovered it. And they had to keep it quiet for a long time because of the communist regime. But in the drunken, one of the major assassins was drunk that night, and all that. Alexei and one of the females was went missing. And they found all of them except two. And we were over there to identify the ones that they actually did find at that time. But subsequently, they have found two more of them. They found Alexei and the other females.
So the ones where Bill recommended a dig around the site of a pit where Alexei and possibly a female that might have been Anastasia were burned, is that where you're talking about since the book was written, perhaps? They found them.
Yes, it was, but we were never over there after they found the bodies. Bill became ill, and so we did not return to Russia after he had actually written the book.
Although you said you were just there this summer, right?
But yes, I was there this summer. In fact, I was there 2 weeks ago, and I was in the fortress of Peter and Paul, and saw where they are entombed. And they are not, it's interesting, the royal family are in a tomb with crosses on them, and the Romanovs are in a different part of the cathedral, and they are totally, they're displayed totally different. But I'm not talking about display. The notation or the monument is totally different from the remainder of the royal family that's actually buried there.
Hmm. We're speaking with FGCU Associate Professor and Program Leader of Forensic Studies, Dr. Heather Walsh-Haney, and Margaret Maples Gilliland, who donated the William R. Maples Collection to the FGCU Library. It opens this week. Join our conversation or ask a question by calling 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or join our live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. So I'm wondering if popular TV shows like Bones caused an increase in the interest in students wanting to become forensic anthropologists, the so-called CSI effect.
It does. It does have an effect. There's increased interest in forensic anthropology, and a lot of it points directly to Kathy Reichs' show, Bones, which is based upon her fiction books. And, you know, I ask my students in the classes to watch an episode, and then I have them tie one line of evidence in that episode to peer-reviewed journal articles to see if the writers have kept the science in forensic anthropology. And when the students come back with their comparison, they'll usually say, well, the writers could have written an ending like this. And they'll explain where they took artistic or creative means to kind of tie up the show for TV.
Interesting. In the time Dr. Maples taught at UF, Margaret, did the gender of his students change at all?
Well, he basically had female students. His final student, who got his PhD 2 months before Bill's death, was actually a male. But when he would come home and say that he had a new student, my first question was, what was her name? And I was amazed that this was 20 years ago, 30 years ago. I was amazed that they... female students actually wanted to go into this. Because I had found it fascinating my whole life, but I didn't actually, except on a few cases, work with the actual material. You know, I actually helped with the value jet, but it takes a certain skill to be able to separate yourself and work with a lot of the remains that Heather works with and her colleagues.
Is the gender situation the same here?
Actually, it is. I have more female students than male. But I also found that with working with Dr. Maples, he trusted me. He valued, no matter my age, my comments. He held me accountable for what I was learning. He was critical but caring. And maybe that was because he was mostly surrounded by female students. But I felt that he respected females all the time, whether it was a victim, a student, Margaret, whomever. He just really valued us.
I want to mention, before we get to our wrapping up, that he autopsied the serial killer Ted Bundy, who was electrocuted in 1989 for murdering at least 36 women. He also was part of the Danny Rowling case, the Gainesville man who murdered five people in 1990, who he said that case was a significant victory for the science of forensic anthropology in Florida. He helped tie the murder weapon to the case. Very interesting parts of that book. But he also said he laments the lack of programs at universities, yet the never-ending caseload. What is the current status, Heather?
Well, the current status for anthropology departments in general in Florida is bleak. As many of you may remember, a few years ago, it was our own governor that devalued anthropology as a STEM field as well as psychology and others. So starting anthropology programs in this state is not something that can happen right now. But I will tell you that forensic and physical or biological anthropology is very much a STEM field, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And it's something that I share and teach students all the time about the biomechanics of a skeleton, about why we are shaped and move the way we move, and then also how behavior shapes our bodies, how there is this give back between the environment, behavior, and anatomy. And my hope is that the legislation and our own administration knows the value in that.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Margaret, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And Heather, thank you.
Thank you. I'm honored.
Margaret Maples Gilliland donated her husband, Dr. William R. Maples' collection to FGCU's library in honor of FGCU forensic anthropologist Heather Walsh Haney, who was one of his students. The exhibit opens Thursday from 5 to 7 on the third floor of the FGCU library. It runs through November 14th. Information is online at wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live, and you can continue the discussion on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or on Twitter using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. This is WGCU Fort Myers, 90.1 FM, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida. For Richard Chinqui, John Davis, and Luke Martin, I'm Amy Tardiff. Have a great afternoon.